I lived among people whose fathers had helped Lincoln survey land and build fences and drive hogs to market. For months I delved among old books and letters and speeches and half-forgotten newspapers and musty court records, trying to understand Lincoln. I spent one summer in the little town of Petersburg. I went there because it is only a mile away from the restored village of New Salem, where Lincoln spent the happiest and most formative years of his life. There he ran a mill and a grocery store, studied law, worked as a blacksmith, refereed cockfights and horse races, fell in love, and had his heart broken. Even in the heyday of its glory, New Salem never had more than 100 inhabitants, and its entire existence covered a span of about 10 years. Shortly after Lincoln left the village, it was abandoned. Bats and swallows nested in the decaying cabins, and for more than half a century, cows grazed over the spot. A few years ago, however, the state of Illinois secured the site, made it a public park, and built replicas of the log cabins that had stood there 100 years before. So today, the deserted village of New Salem looks much as it did in Lincoln's time. The same white oaks under which Lincoln studied and wrestled and made love are still standing. Every morning, I used to take my typewriter and motor up there from Petersburg, and half the chapters in this book were written under those trees. What a lovely spot in which to work. In front of me flowed the winding Sangamon, and all about me the woods and the hayfields were musical with the call of the bobwhite. Through the trees flashed the color of the blue jay, the yellow hammer, and the red bird. I felt Lincoln there. I often used to go there alone on summer nights when the whippoorwills were crying in the woods along the banks of the Sangamon, when the moonlight outlined Rutledge's tavern against the sky, and it stirred me to realize that on such nights, about 100 years ago, young Abe Lincoln and Ann Rutledge had walked over this same ground arm in arm in the moonlight, listening to the night birds and dreaming ecstatic dreams that were destined never to come true. Yet I am convinced that Lincoln found here at New Salem the only supreme happiness that he ever knew. When I came to write the chapter dealing with the death of Lincoln's sweetheart, I put a little folding table and a typewriter in a car and drove out over country roads and through a hog lot and a cow pasture until I reached the quiet, secluded spot where Ann Rutledge lies buried. It is utterly abandoned now and overgrown. To get near a grave, it was necessary to mow down the weeds and brush and vines, and there, where Lincoln came to weep, was set down the story of his grief. Many of the chapters were written in Springfield, some in the sitting room of the old home where Lincoln lived for 16 unhappy years, some at the desk where he composed his first inaugural address, and others above the spot where he came to court and quarrel with Mary Todd. Part 1. Chapter 1. There was a woman in Harrodsburg, it was called Fort Harrod in those days, named Ann McGinty. The old histories record that Ann and her husband brought the first hogs into Kentucky, the first ducks and the first spinning wheel, and they also declare that she was the first woman ever to make butter out there in the dark and bloody wilderness. But her real claim to fame rests upon the fact that she performed an economic and textile miracle. Cotton could neither be grown nor purchased there in the mysterious Indian country, and timber wolves slaughtered the sheep, so it was well nigh impossible to find any substance from which clothes could be made. Then the ingenious Ann McGinty found a way of spinning thread and making McGinty cloth from two substances that were both plentiful and cheap, nettle lint and buffalo wool. It was a tremendous discovery, and housewives traveled as far as 150 miles to sit in her cabin and learn the new art. And as they spun and wove, they talked. And they didn't always talk about nettle lint and buffalo wool. Frequently the conversation degenerated into gossip, and Ann McGinty's cabin soon became the community's acknowledged clearinghouse for scandal. In those